midnight screens in a quiet lab glow. A rhythm stutters under skin and bone.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So I want you to start off today by just imagining your heart's electrical system as this perfectly timed orchestra.
Well, that's a good way to look at it, yeah.
Right. Like, in this scenario, the sinus node is the conductor, you know, setting the fundamental pace of the music. And then the atrioventricular node, or the AV node, is sort of the lead violinist.
Catching the rhythm and seamlessly passing it to the rest of the symphony.
Exactly. Making sure every single section plays in total harmony.
And I mean, it's a delicate, continuous performance, right? It happens literally billions of times in an average lifespan.
Billions of times. It's wild to think about.
Yeah. And those electrical impulses, they have to fire with just astonishing precision to keep blood pumping to the brain, to the body, everything.
Right. But okay, what really happens when the conductor just suddenly loses the rhythm? Or, you know, when the electrical signal just completely stops?
That is the terrifying question, yeah.
I want you to consider a real medical mystery here. We're talking about young, otherwise completely healthy individuals. Sometimes we're talking about young children or teenagers, right?
Yeah, kids with their whole lives ahead of them.
Exactly. And they suddenly develop these severe cardiac conduction defects. They're experiencing heart rates just dropping to dangerous levels, suddenly requiring emergency pacemakers.
And you know, the scariest part is there's no obvious cause.
Right, like no heart attacks, no aging-related wear and tear, just a sudden catastrophic electrical failure out of nowhere.
Today we celebrate the work of Michele Nicastro, Najim Larucci, Connie Arbezina, and their extensive global consortium led by the Amsterdam UMC, University of Amsterdam, who have advanced our understanding of the genetic foundations of inherited cardiac conduction defects and hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
So when we hear about someone needing a pacemaker, I think we usually picture an older adult, right? Like the machinery of the heart has just naturally worn down over decades.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, cardiac conduction defects, which we'll probably just call CCDs for short in this deep dive, they are primarily the consequence of that age-related degeneration.
Just normal wear and tear.
Right, or sometimes they result from, you know, structural heart disease, or they present as a complication after major heart surgery.
Okay, sure. But when a CCD suddenly appears in the young, that's completely different, isn't it?
It is a massive red flag, a huge red flag for an underlying genetic disorder.
Because, I mean, an 11-year-old's heart shouldn't just run out of battery.
Exactly. We already know of a few gene variants that cause early onset CCD, but the frustrating reality in the clinic is that many of these young patients, they remain totally genetically unexplained.
Wow, really? So doctors just don't know why it's happening.
Right. I mean, we know the error is written somewhere in their DNA, obviously, but the genome is vast and the exact location of the mutation has just remained completely hidden.
Okay, so to make this a bit more accessible for our listeners, think of this family of proteins we're looking at today. They're called the Popeye domain-containing proteins, or POPDC for short. Let's think of them as the specialized electricians of the heart.
The electricians, I like that.
Right, and we already knew the job of one specific electrician, POPDC1. Like, mutations there are associated with muscular dystrophy and AV block, where the signal from the top of the heart just fails to reach the bottom.
Yes, the POPDC1 link was well established.
But there was another protein, POPDC2, acting as this mysterious contractor, just kind of working in the background.
Yeah, and decades of research offered, well, these really tantalizing clues about that specific contractor. Animal models, for instance, they strongly suggested POPDC2 was absolutely vital for heart rhythm.
What kind of animal models are we talking about here?
Well, mice, for one. Mice missing the POPDC2 gene, they develop stress-induced sinus pauses and this dangerously slow heart rate, which we call bradycardia.
Okay, so the heart just slows way down.
Exactly. And then when scientists suppress the POPDC2 gene in zebrafish, the fish develops severe AV block.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so the animal models were practically screaming that POPDC2 was essential. Yet a direct link to a human disease for POPDC2 was just entirely missing from the medical literature.
But I mean, the leap from a zebrafish or a mouse to a human patient is massive. The research team must have needed a starting point in the real world, right? Like a human case that proved those animal models were actually pointing in the right direction.
They did, and that starting point emerged through a really intense clinical hunt, focusing on a child that the researchers referred to as part of Family A.
Okay, tell me about family.
So this individual, somewhere between 11 and 15 years old, presented with just a terrifying clinical picture for a teenager. Severe sinus node disease, AV block, and hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
Which is, that's a dangerous thickening of the heart muscle, right?
Yes, exactly. It makes it much harder for the heart to pump blood effectively.
Wow. I mean, a teenager suddenly facing profound cardiac machinery failure like that, that is a nightmare for a family and honestly, a incredibly complex puzzle for a cardiologist.
Absolutely. And when the clinical team examined the family history, they noted something critical. The child's parents shared ancestry. They were actually first cousins.
Oh, okay. So in genetics, that immediately points suspicion toward an autosomal recessive trait, right?
Spot on. We all inherit two copies of every gene, you know, one from each parent. When parents share ancestry, the statistical probability of both of them carrying the exact same rare hidden mutation is significantly higher.
So to find that hidden mutation, the team essentially had to go in and read the entire instruction manual of this child's cellular machinery?
Basically, yeah. They utilized whole exome sequencing.
And just to clarify, instead of sequencing the entire genome, which, you know, includes a lot of non-coding space, exome sequencing isolates just the 1 to 2% of the DNA that actually codes for proteins, right?
Exactly. It's a much more targeted approach. And hidden within that data, they finally found it. A rare homozygous variant in the POPDC2 gene.
Homozygous meaning the child had two bad copies.
Right. Both parents were heterozygous carriers, meaning they each possessed one normal copy and one mutated copy, and they were completely healthy.
But the child tragically inherited the mutated copy from both of them.
Yes. But, you know, a single family presentation is a tragic anecdote. But it isn't enough to establish a brand new genetic syndrome in the medical textbook.
Oh, for sure. You can't base a whole new disease profile on one patient. The team needed more evidence.
Which is where expanding the search comes in. And this is where modern genomic medicine becomes a truly global detective story.
I love this part. How did they widen the net?
Well, they screened 78 other individuals who had similar, completely unexplained clinical presentations of conduction disease and hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
Okay.
But they also tapped into massive global genetic databases, specifically Decipher and GeneMatcher.
Right, GeneMatcher. You can think of these as like secure matchmaking networks for medical researchers, right?
That's a perfect way to describe it. A clinician in one country uploads an anonymous genetic profile of a mysterious disease, hoping a scientist halfway across the world has a patient with the exact same genetic typo.
And did this global dragnet actually work?
It did. It really did. It led them to three more families with similar clinical profiles. And crucially, all of them carried rare variants in both copies of their POPDC2 genes.
Wow. Okay, so finding the genetic typo is a major breakthrough, clearly. But we really have to push this further for this deep dive. Because simply proving the spelling error exists doesn't explain how the machinery actually breaks down inside the heart cell.
You're exactly right. And the team actually hit a significant wall at this exact stage of the research.
Really? What was the roadblock?
Well, to see how these specific mutations broke the POPDC2 protein, they needed to examine its physical three-dimensional shape. But the problem was that no experimental 3D structure of the human POPDC2 protein existed in any scientific database anywhere.
Wait, really? None at all. So without a physical blueprint, they basically had to construct one digitally from scratch?
Yes, from the ground up. They turned to revolutionary artificial intelligence for this, specifically AlphaFold 2 Multimer, alongside a structural modeling tool called SwissModel.
Ah, AlphaFold, that's huge right now. So AlphaFold predicts how a linear string of amino acids folds into a complex three-dimensional shape.
Right. And because POPDC2 functions by binding to another POPDC2 molecule, they needed the multi-immersion of the AI to build the full dimeric structure.
Got it. So it's modeling how the pieces fit together.
Exactly. They then merged that with SwissModel to predict exactly how this newly modeled protein binds to a crucial cellular messenger called cyclic AMP, or CAMP.
Okay, let's bring in another analogy here. Think of CAMP as the adrenaline signal, you know, the emergency flare of the cell. Normally, POPDC2 catches that flare in a specific pocket and tells the surrounding potassium channels to open the floodgates for an electrical signal.
Yes, it's a signaling cascade.
But when they mapped the patient's mutations onto this new 3D model, what happened? They found that the variants literally crushed the catchment on the POPDC2 protein, right?
Crushed it completely. The structural model showed the binding pocket was ruined, so the emergency flare goes entirely unnoticed, the channel stays shut, and the heart's electrical system stalls.
That is just incredible that they could see that virtually.
It is, but you know, that structural destruction had to be proven in a functional biological environment too. A computer model isn't enough on its own.
So what was the next step?
The team moved to patch clamp electrophysiology. They utilized human embryonic kidney cells, known as HEK293 cells.
Okay, hold on, I have to challenge this step. A kidney cell in a plastic dish doesn't beat. It isn't part of a heart. How does testing a kidney cell prove anything about a cardiac arrhythmia?
It's a really fair question. But HEK293 cells, they're essentially biological blank slates.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they allow researchers to test specific electrical properties without interference from the thousands of other specialized proteins found in a real heart cell. It isolates the variable.
That makes sense. Okay.
So the researchers engineered these kidney cells to express either the healthy POPDC2 protein or the mutated versions found in the patients. Then they measured how POPDC2 interacted with a specific potassium channel called TRK1.
And potassium channels, just to remind everyone, those are the microscopic pores that let electrical current flow across the cell membrane, creating the actual spark that makes a heartbeat possible.
Precisely. So they are measuring those microscopic electrical sparks in total isolation.
So to solve this, they didn't just sequence a gene. They digitally built the protein from scratch, ran it in a kidney cell to isolate it, and measured the tiny electrical currents.
Yeah, using a tiny glass pipette sealed to the cell membrane. And they proved that normal PPO-PDC2 binds with the TRK1 potassium channel and significantly boosts the electrical current flowing through it. It basically acts as an amplifier.
But what about when they tested the mutated POPDC2 proteins from the patients?
Complete functional failure.
Wow.
The mutant proteins failed entirely to increase the TRK1 current. They were so utterly useless, they generated the exact same electrical current as a cell with an empty vector.
Meaning a cell with no POPDC2 inserted in it at all.
Exactly. The mutated protein was functionally invisible.
Okay, so we have a broken catchment, and we have proof the electrical current is choked off in a single cell. But we still have to translate this back to the macroscopic scale of a human patient, right?
Yes, and to bridge that gap, they built highly complex computer simulations of human sinus node and atrial cells.
Because you can't just extrapolate a single cell's current to a whole beating heart.
Exactly. They took the altered electrical data from the isolated patch-a-clamp experiments and fed it into this virtual human heart model.
And what did the simulation show? I'm guessing it extended the resting phase between beats, like the diastolic depolarization rate.
You nailed it. In human terms, the heart takes way too long to recharge before it can fire the next beat. And that is what creates those dangerous pauses.
So the virtual model confirmed the clinical reality we saw in the patients.
It did. And that clinical reality across the four families, representing six affected individuals, was remarkably consistent and severe.
Let's run down those numbers because they are striking.
They really are. So all six individuals had AV block. Four of them had sinus node disease, presenting as those dangerous pauses or severe bradycardia. Two experienced sudden cardiac arrest, and two had hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
And how many needed intervention?
Five out of the six required pacemakers, with two needing implantable cardioverter defibrillators, or ICDs, to physically shock the heart if it went into a fatal rhythm.
This brings up a critical discrepancy, though. We discussed earlier that mutations in the related protein, POPDC1, cause AV block, but those patients also typically develop muscular dystrophy. But these individuals with POPDC2 mutations, they showed no overt clinical signs of a muscle-wasting disease, did they? This is an isolated primary cardiac syndrome.
Yes, purely cardiac. In fact, one patient even underwent a muscle biopsy. And while there were some, you know, very minor microscopic abnormalities, there was absolutely no overt muscular dystrophy.
So why the difference? If POPDC1 and PCOPDC2 are such similar electricians in the body, why do mutations in POPDC2 cause sinus node disease while POPDC1 mutations do not?
This is where the researchers deployed human heart transcriptomics to map the cellular anatomy.
Which is just incredible technology.
Oh, it's amazing. Using single nucleus RNA sequencing and spatial transcriptomics, which basically creates a highly detailed molecular map of exactly where genes are turned on in the heart tissue, they found the answer.
And what did the map show?
Well, it showed that POPDC1 and POPDC2 are highly co-expressed in the AV node. They work together there as a complex. If either one is broken, the entire complex fails, resulting in AV block.
That explains the AV block in both mutations. But the molecular map of the sinus node looks completely different, doesn't it?
Entirely different. In the sinus node, which is the primary conductor of our heart's orchestra, POPDC2 is incredibly abundant, while POPDC1 expression is remarkably sparse.
Ah, so the sinus node relies almost entirely on POPDC2 to function?
Yes. So if you mutate POPDC1, the sinus node is mostly fine because it wasn't relying on it anyway.
Yeah.
But if you mutate POPDC2, the sinus node loses its primary regulatory protein entirely, leading directly to the sinus pauses and bradycardia seen in these patients.
Wow, so the spatial mapping just perfectly predicts the clinical disease. The final step in this detective story, though, is proving beyond a shadow of a doubt that you absolutely need two bad copies of this gene to get sick. The parents of family A were perfectly healthy, but how do we know that holds true across the general public?
The team went huge for this. They cross-referenced their findings against massive population biobanks, specifically the UK Biobank and DECODE in Iceland.
Those databases are enormous.
Huge. They contain genetic and medical data representing over 1 million individuals. And searching through that immense data set, they found 426 heterozygous carriers.
So 426 people walking around with just one mutated copy of POPDC2. And when they looked at the medical records of those 426 carriers, what did the cardiac health data actually show?
Zero association with the clinical syndrome. There were no statistically significant instances of AV block, cardiac arrest, unexplained pacemakers, or hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
None at all.
None.
Meh.
This million-person proof confirms this is strictly an autosomal recessive condition. If you possess just one healthy copy of the POPDC2 gene, that single copy is robust enough to keep the entire electrical orchestra playing perfectly.
I mean, just consider the immediate relief that provides to these families. If a teenager is diagnosed with this condition, their siblings can be tested. And if a sibling finds out they are only a heterozygous carrier, they are freed from a lifetime of intense clinical anxiety.
They don't need constant monitoring for a sudden cardiac arrest. They can just live their lives.
Right. And for the patients themselves, this research changes clinical practice tomorrow, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. POPDC2 must now be officially added to clinical genetic testing panels. When a young person presents with unexplained sinus node dysfunction, AV block, or hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, cardiologists now know exactly which genetic sequence to check.
It replaces the terror of an unexplained diagnosis with a precise, targeted answer.
It gives them a concrete reason for why this is happening.
Yeah, but, you know, we have definitely found the broken switch in the genetic code, but I want to push back on the idea that every single mystery here is solved. The paper acknowledges limitations. We are still reverse engineering exactly how that broken switch short-circuits the entire electrical grid in a living, breathing human.
That's a very fair point. The exact cellular mechanism of why a reduced TRAK1 current causes bradycardia remains mathematically complex.
Right, because computer models aren't perfect.
Exactly. When they fed the patch clamp data into their computer simulation, they simulated a 41% reduction in TRAK1 current to achieve that altered diastolic depolarization rate.
But translating a 41% reduction in a simulation to the profound, life-threatening sinus pauses seen in human patients, I mean, that highlights that biological systems have compensatory mechanisms that computer models just still struggle to fully capture.
Yeah, the human body is incredibly adept at trying to fix itself. And sometimes the math just gets fuzzy.
And there was also a massive curveball with one of the patients in Family D, wasn't there?
Yes, there was. They presented with severe bradycardia and cardiac arrest, but it happened during an episode of acute fulminant myocarditis.
Which is this explosive, severe inflammation of the heart muscle, right? Like from a virus.
Right. So the question becomes, was the viral inflammation the spark that ignited the genetic powder keg, or was the myocarditis itself a direct feature of the POPDC2 disease?
How do they answer that?
Well, the authors are very transparent that they cannot entirely rule out the role of the myocarditis as a trigger in this specific case. However, given that this patient's electrical phenotype perfectly matched the other five individuals and they had two highly destructive truncating mutations, the genetic defect was highly likely the primary culprit.
It makes sense, but it definitely points to a critical next step for the scientific community.
Absolutely. We need long-term clinical follow-up of these families and even the heterozygous carriers over decades, we really need to understand every nuance of how this genetic vulnerability interacts with environmental stress tests, like severe viral infections.
Right, because life happens, people get sick, and we need to know how this specific mutation reacts.
Exactly.
Well, as we wrap up this deep dive, let's just distill all of these complex layers we've talked about. The AI protein modeling, the transcriptomics, the global databases, down to the core takeaway. What is the central bottom line insight you think our listeners should take away from this paper?
The central insight is that biallelic loss of function variants in the POPDC2 gene cause a newly identified recessive cardiovascular syndrome characterized by severe electrical conduction defects and hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. By destroying the protein's ability to bind KMP and regulate TRK1 potassium channels, these variants short-circuit the heart's intrinsic pacemaker system. What does this mean for the future of diagnosing and treating rare electrical heart disorders in the young?
I think it means the era of treating the symptoms while guessing at the underlying cause is rapidly ending. And honestly, it leaves me with one final provocative thought. How many other idiopathic or totally unexplained diseases are out there right now, just waiting for this level of multi-layered science to decode them? We are talking about taking single-cell spatial transcriptomics, AI protein folding that solved a 50-year grand challenge in biology, and million-person biobanks, and aiming all of those incredible tools at a single medical mystery. If the diagnostic tools of the past were like looking through a blurry window, this paper proves we are now building microscopes that can see the very code of life, down to the exact shape of a single binding pocket.
It is truly a new frontier in medicine.
It really is. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Late night screens in a quiet lab glow. A rhythm stutters under skin and bone. Two tiny letters in a hidden code turn one steady heartbeat into stone. When the mess can't hold on to the spark, when the gate won't open in the dark, you can hear the silence leave its mark. Two copies, one signal, breaking the line. A whisper of camp can't find its time. And the current that should carry me through fades out when Pop DC2 can't pull track 1, 2. Two copies, one signal, tell me what to do. Family traces in an ECG trace, pauses and blocks where the pulse should run. A wall of muscle growing out of place, like a storm building up around the sun. But one good copy doesn't write. In crowded data sets, there's no loud call. So we name the pattern, frame the clue. Put the right gene on the test, see it through. Two copies, one signal, breaking the line. A whisper of camp can't find its time. Now the map gets clearer in the blue-white light. Quiet chaos in the night. Two copies. Two copies. One signal. Turn the fear into sight.